we want to do this just for the same reasons you just indicated. We need to get this thing behind us. It's really stymieing us in terms of developing the industry in Pennsylvania. And we need to be clear, shale is not going anywhere. Nope. It's here in Pennsylvania. We've got the largest deposit in the world. It's the business and the economics of it pretty much require that it's really not going to go anywhere. The question is, what do we do with it, and do we get our fair share of resources from it to invest in the other kinds of things that we need to invest in, which is like education, but also, Rick, to invest, hopefully, finally, in clean energy technology. I mean, truly clean energy technology like solar and wind, which is where we really need to be going with this.
I'm right there wishing with you, and I hope that the House passes House Bill 1580 to change the SRECs to make sure that people who put solar panels on their house are compensated.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing that we need to go forward. We need to use the resources from shale to help develop those kinds of industries.
Yep.
Because the truth of the matter is the wind and the solar power are going to be with us much longer than any carbon-based energy system is going to be here for us. So, you know, we got to use one to help develop the other. And here's the opportunity for that. Everybody understands it. It makes perfect economic common sense. But we got some holdouts here. We got to convince them. They need to be listening more to the Rick Smith Show.
There you go.
I'm going to keep plugging your show, man.
I appreciate that. We need it. We absolutely do. Last line of questioning I've got for you. The House is working on this unemployment bill that, again, when Scott Perry was putting out House Bill 916, really just a horrible, it was a big sloppy wet kiss to the Chamber of Commerce and to the NFIB. Basically, it was written by them. I shouldn't even say it was a sloppy wet kiss. It was their hand that did it. But now they're pushing some of the really bad stuff into 1030. This unemployment thing, I think, is extremely important, especially as we look into the future, could be looking at a double-dip recession.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, it really comes with your voice and folks who are listening to your program and really paying attention, going to your website to really get the information out here. There's some fundamental choices that are going to have to be made with respect to how we go forward on unemployment compensation. And all of these state or government-supported benefit programs that really are crucial to helping folks and their families get through these difficult economic times. So we passed a measure out of the Senate. It was a tough negotiation, but we did, I think, something right, something creative, and something appropriate to deal with the issue. We've got to June 11th or maybe a few extra days after that. I think to June 17th has been the final extra, is really the last day.
When we lose the federal
folks,
money.
Before folks miss a paycheck.
Okay.
Okay. And so, you know, we need to keep working on it, and we need to keep public about this and really, you know, kind of force folks to get behind something that really makes sense and really responds to the crisis that exists. I can't talk enough, and I appreciate what you're doing, about this huge disparity in wealth and income that exists in this state and across this country. We have got to be about the business of really supporting workers and their families, and trying to put money back in the pockets of working people.
Absolutely.
Because they're just getting screwed every which way they turn.
And just decimated at every turn. And it comes down to this tax code we've got. If we had a more progressive tax code,
exactly,
where the people with the bigger shoulders carry bigger, more water, we'd be all right. Because here's my fear. My big fear is that education is the next infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing our highways and our roads and our bridges crumbling because we, for the last 30 years, have not been investing in it. I don't want to look back in 10 or 15 years and go, we did the exact same thing to education, and we have a lost generation.
It's out there. It could happen. It could happen. If we're not vigilant, if we're not speaking up, you know, look, the rebirth of the nation really is in the rebirth of the nation. The rebirth of the economic spirit of this country really comes as we reinvest in ourselves and rebuild our physical infrastructure and rebuild our intellectual and academic infrastructure. We focus on making our kids smart and compassionate and humane participants in the society, in American society. That's when we'll start to regain our position around the world, and hopefully regain our position amongst one another, where we can have much more civil dialogue and much more thoughtful dialogue amongst one another. So we've got to invest in ourselves. It happens in the physical infrastructure, but it also happens in the social intellectual infrastructure.
Yeah, we need critical thinkers so they can look at this system and realize who's screwing them. Pennsylvania State Senator Vince Hughes, I appreciate your time. Always, always great to talk to you. Look forward to having you back again real soon.
All right, my man. Take care of yourself, Rick. Yeah,
thanks so much. Again, SenatorHughes.com is the website. There's a link at our spot at TheRickSmithShow.com. We're right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
To the Rick Smith Show.
Michigan's working families are mighty hard hit these days, but the state's new governor, Rick Snyder, has reached out with a helping hand. Not for workers, though. Instead, he handed out a 60% tax cut to corporations. To help pay for this giveaway, he snuck into law a provision that takes away 6 weeks of jobless benefits for out-of-work Michiganders. Plus, he intends to tax the pensions of working-class retirees. Where do today's far right-wing governors get such far-out, nasty, anti-middle-class ideas? Directly from an extensive network of corporate-backed wonk shops set up in every state. They grind out extremist schemes to eliminate public services for regular people and sever corporations from any responsibility for the common good of our society. In Michigan, the group is called the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Richly funded by such multi-billionaire families as the Koch brothers, the Waltons of Walmart, and the DeVosses of the Amway fortune, Mackinac vigorously pushes the billionaires' plutocratic agenda. It's a vehement opponent of unions, for example, and it pushes privatization of everything from schools to highways. In January, just as Snyder was taking office, Mackinac's dogmatists published 4 recommendations for turning Michigan into a corporate laissez-faire land. They included a tyrannical proposal to let the governor seize control of local governments and install corporate overseers to cancel union contracts, rewrite budgets, sell off public assets, and bypass or even dismiss local elected officials. This monster is now law in Michigan. Indeed, Snyder adopted all 4 of Mackinac's proposals. This is Jim Hightower saying, these secretive front groups are modern-day Trojan horses, allowing a few corporate billionaires to come into state governments and seize control of public policy, perhaps even in your state.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.com.
Officially in love with Michelle Bachman, even if she's batshit crazy. Rick Smith.
Well, I gotta be honest. I guess we gotta talk about it. It's dumb, but we still have to at least address it. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Again, it's the Wienergate. I think I've heard every Wiener joke possibly put together. His Wiener's cooked! Just a whole bunch of dumbness. But again, you know, what would you expect? We are a juvenile society. It's like high school. It's all the gossip's there. And of course, what I would expect from Democrats, came true, and Ed Schultz kind of led the way. Just what I would expect from surrender monkeys, who have said, he needs to take one for the team and resign. And I gotta be honest, I'm not a resign person. I think it's dumb what he did. There should be an investigation. And in fact, Nancy Pelosi is going to have an ethics probe. And if he did something ethically wrong, used government money, did something that is explicitly wrong legally, then we got a problem. But as far as his personal life, he's a guy going through a midlife crisis. He's not somebody who runs on, I'm a values candidate, or I tout family values. Or no, he's not that guy. In fact, I think the people in his district are probably going, what, not everybody doesn't tweet pictures of themselves naked? I mean, come on, who cares? My problem with it is if you look at the pictures, they're bad. I mean, if he thought that those pictures made him look attractive, I got a problem with his judgment of pictures. But policy-wise, I like the guy. Policy-wise, I think he's right on. My big problem with him is if you're going to poke a lion with a stick constantly, as he has done for the years, don't be surprised when you do something stupid and they want to bite you. And that's what this is. He gave them the ammunition to go after him. But at the end of the day, the reality is Wienergate to me is not important. It doesn't matter to me. It's not going to create one job, other than maybe for Breitbart, the guy who got the story, and he's got the underwear shot now permanently. But, you know, we're crucifying people for being human. And the only time I do that, and I have to be honest, the only time I crucify someone for being human is when they're the ones who say, hey, look at me. I'm the perfect person. I would never do those things. Those are the people that I have problems with. You know, the David Vitters of the world who tout their family values, and then you find out that he's in with the D.C. madam, probably being the guy, Diaper Dave, with the soiled diapers having some hooker wipe him up. I got a problem with that. You know, Larry Craig, did Larry Craig leave? I don't remember him leaving. I remember him staying the entire time and finishing out his term. But as far as this goes, I got to be honest, I do not care one little bit, and he should absolutely not, under any circumstances, resign, in my opinion. Just should not do it whatsoever. You know, and I love Larry Craig, you know, the toe-tapping guy.
Let me be clear. I am not gay. I never have been gay.
That's sex in the men's room. Never mind. Not. So give me, bestow upon us your opinion on this, Jake.
Well, first of all, let me say, personally, I admire his positions. I can say this in all honesty. I don't know that I was ever prouder of a congressman than when Wiener stepped up. Congressman Wiener stood up to the Republicans when they were trying to blackmail the Democrats. It involved a bill that was beneficial to the veterans. And they tried to blackmail the Democrats, and Wiener was absolutely outraged, and I've never seen a congressman that angry. And it was moral outrage, and I was standing up and cheering and saying, hooray. How many times have we talked about the Democrats not having kahunas? And here was a man standing up and telling it like it is. Yes, he was loud, and he was shouting, and he was emotional, and three times they asked him to yield, and he said, I will not. They asked him again, he said, I will not. They asked him again, and he said, I will not. And he was absolutely right. Now, having said that, yes, I agree with you. As long as he didn't violate the law, as long as he didn't violate any basic rules of Congress, he should not resign. However, make no mistake, there will be some political pressure from within his party to resign.
Because there are a bunch of
surrender Republicans will try to use that, and there's the negative. If there's any negatives, there's the negatives. The Republicans will try to keep that the center of attraction instead of going after the issues. The Democrats had the Republicans on the run. And now there's a reprieve, and there's the negative.
That, for me, is for the voters to decide in his district. And, again, I don't think his district cares. I just don't. Anyway, we take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Back after this.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask Me Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
At PSECU, we know those holiday bills can really pile up and hit you with double-digit interest rates or fees that start to snowball. Next thing you know, you're buried in a mountain of debt. Dig out by using our 3.9 annual percentage rate Visa balance transfer. Good through December 31st, 2012. That's a really big deal. And you heard that right. Our really big deal, 3.9% APR, is good through December 31st, 2012. And we don't charge you a balance transfer fee. So if you used any other credit card to pay for your holiday purchases, move those high interest rate balances to your PSECU Visa. The sooner you get in on this really big deal, the more you'll save. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pscc.com/life. Get in on a really big deal Visa balance transfer. Don't wait. Start saving.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small. By giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all.
It's class warfare. My class is winning, but they shouldn't be.
A working class hero is something to be.
The taxation system has tilted toward the rich and away from the middle class.
A working class hero is something to be.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You can email me, Rick, at therickSmithShow.com. So Tim Pawlenty is back in the news. He's one of the front runners, I guess. I mean, he's one of the guys that I think has a moderate chance. As far as the Republican field, it's wide open. There are a whole bunch of really crazy people out there. He seems a little less crazy. But when you start looking at his tax plan, you start looking at his vision for what the future of this country looks like, it scares the hell out of me. And evidently today he delivered an address at the University of Chicago, about this economic plan of his. And again, it's the same old thing, same basic thing. We need to have tax cuts for the very wealthy, tax cuts for corporations. We need to have, all the stuff, the usual suspects. And he had to one-up Mitt Romney. Romney, the other day, you'll remember, said that he supported a cap on federal spending at 20%. Didn't say he favored a cap on federal revenue at 20% to match the spending at 20%. Didn't say that. No. So again, this cap idea, which sounds really great. We're going to cap federal spending. Yeah! What happens if you're only bringing in 13% of GDP? You have a 7% gap, which means deficits, which means larger debt, which is what's going to happen. So all of this cap talk nonsense. Anyway, Mitzi said 20%. Well, Pawlenty can't be outdone. In fact, Mitzi said he just wanted to have a cap. He didn't say how it was going to be done. Pawlenty said we need a constitutional amendment, and it's going to be 18%. Ha! Take that and put it in your Massachusetts pipe and smoke it. So what his plan is, again, and it's a great plan. It's beautiful. It's going to create no jobs whatsoever. But it's a great plan if you're wealthy. And as I was saying earlier today, I wish I were independently wealthy because, boy, this guy would be great for me. If I was making, a couple $1 million a year, this guy would be freaking awesome. I'd vote for him in a heartbeat if I was making $5 million a year. So here's the game plan. The Pawlenty plan. We're going to slash taxes for businesses. Chop them right off. We're going to slash taxes for individuals. Boom, done. We're going to cut government spending down to 18%. We're going to eliminate all those burdensome regulations. We're going to do all that stuff. Yeah. In fact, we're going to cut the business tax rate from 35%, which it is now, and of course nobody pays it, down to 15%. I mean, nobody's going to pay that either, but it makes it look good. We're going to set the individual rate at 10%. 10% for married couples earning up to 100 grand. 10%. Boom. Now, if you make over 100 grand, it's going to be 25%. which again, dropping that top rate down just a little bit further, a little bit further. And I'm going, how are we going to pay for anything? If we do this, we've got the 18% cap, right? 18% cap. Understand this. 18% of spending. That's what we're going to spend. No more. So all you old people, all you sick people, all you children who want to eat, screw you. Nothing for you. Now, if you do what he says, what Pallente wants, the Pallente plan, if we do the Pallente plan, our friend Michael Linden over at the Center for American Progress calculated the numbers using the Pallente plan. And what his plan will do will raise 13.6% of revenue from GDP. So we're going to cap spending at 18, right? You with me? 18%, cap it right there, baby. But the revenue side, because you need the balance, you got to have some balance. The revenue side is going to be 13.6. So help me with the math. That means 4.4% deficit. That means over the next decade, we're going to see a $7.8 trillion tax cut for the very wealthy. And what does that mean for you and me? You can say it. Bigger debt. Bigger deficits. Means we're raising that cap over and over and over again so we can support all of these wonderful tax breaks that are going to create no jobs. You know, the whole Bush thing was, we're going to create jobs.
With a robust package of at least $550 billion and across-the-board tax relief, we will help create more than 1 million new jobs.
It's going to do it. Didn't happen, but we're going to do it, Jake. It's going to be there.
Created between 1 and 2 million in entire 8 years. So I think you could give him an F. I think we could grade him on about an F. And we're being generous.
I mean, you look at this and you go, where are the critical thinkers in all of this? All I keep hearing the mantra on all sides, we need to cut spending. The Democrats are no better than the Republicans. Where are the, you know, and you're right on one vein. They have neutered Wiener. They cut the wiener.
Way to crack yourself up, Rick.
They cut the wiener. They gave the wiener.
I mean that.
Snip, snip.
Oh, you should have heard all the. You should have heard all the one-liners.
They cooked his wiener.
Oh my. I think we better move on.
What a dummy! But you look at this, and again, you know, you go back to the reality. Had we not had the Bush tax handouts, we would be in pretty good shape. We'd be about 50% of GDP in debt. You know, had we not done a couple of things, and I go back to the Clinton years, had we not undone Glass-Steagall, had we said, sorry, boring banks, your job is to be boring banks. You're going to give people loans. You're going to make sure that you have X amount in reserve to cover those loans. You're going to be just a boring, average, everyday bank. And your bank presidents, they're going to be boring too. We're not going to turn our banks into casinos. And that's basically what happened with Glass-Steagall when we did away with that. When we said, oh, no, they learned their lesson. They learned their lesson. See, any parent, and this is kind of the idea that I've had, any parent should know better. When the cookie jar is left open, no matter how many times you smack the kid's hand, the temptation to reach in and grab one of those tasty morsels and eat the whole jar comes back again and again and again. And I understand it. I get it. So why would you think that the banks would be any different than my 5-year-old who doesn't have this, or me for that instance, who doesn't have the, you know, the control to go, no, I don't want all of them. That's what happened to our banking industry. They got their hand in the cookie jar, man. And then it was just good. And it was great. All these are fantastic. And before you knew it, the jar was empty. And then they said, oh, there's no more money. We stole it all. And they went to their president. They went to the little shrub and said, uh-oh, we're in trouble. And the little shrub said, okay, start up the printers. instead of doing what I've said we should have done, start taxing them. In fact, all of those hedge fund managers who made $1 billion a year, sorry, national defense. We're taking it. Because you're the ones who did this, man. And that's what gets me. The people who did this, they walked away. Walked away scot-free. Not even a black mark on their conscience.
But it wasn't just the hedge fund managers. Some of the very head CEOs who drove their companies into bankruptcy when the federal money, with the stimulus money, bailed them out. They came back and gave them unconscionable bonuses. They gave them, in some instances, golden parachutes.
In virtually all. I look at Robert Nardelli, and it will never, never get out of my head. The fact that this guy tanked Home Depot's stock. He did a horrible job. Yet when they walked him out the door, they basically had security taken by the arms. Here's a cardboard box. Get your stuff and get out. Oh, and don't forget your $210 million check as you go. I'm going, really? $210 million for a guy who tanked your company and basically failed? What happened to the meritocracy? Where's the meritocracy? Truth of the matter is, there is no meritocracy. There's not. They try and convince you working people. You people who get your hands dirty and punch a clock and then have to pay for their messes. They try and convince you that there's some bizarre, there's this meritocracy out there. There's not. Every time the wealth class gets into trouble, you have to sacrifice. You have to pay the freight, which means longer till retirement, kiss that 401k goodbye, the health care is going to go down the drain, your jobs are gone, and oh, by the way, we're going to steal your unemployment by having crappy bills like Scott Perry's 916 written by the business community. Where's your voice? Why aren't you outraged? Why aren't people taking to the streets? And you look at this budget that they're trying to ram through. Are you kidding me? They're going to steal education away from our children. They're going to make education look like our infrastructure in 10 years. That's their goal. Because we need people, as Carlin says, just smart enough to run the machines, but not smart enough to ask why. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with State Senator Jay Costa after this.
For the rest of us, Rick Smith. Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News, I'm Doug Cunningham. Madison firefighters led a no-business-as-usual march at Wisconsin's state capitol Monday as the state Supreme Court heard arguments on whether or not the bill gutting public worker collective bargaining was passed illegally. Police arrested 5 people for alleged disorderly conduct. The state budget, with its heavy cuts to education and other public services, is being taken up by the legislature against the backdrop of continued protests and Walkerville, the protest tent city that began near the Capitol on Saturday in Madison. Former U.S. Senator Russ Feingold walked with Walkerville protesters on Monday in a show of solidarity for labor and against Governor Walker's budget cuts. Inside the Capitol, police arrested an unidentified young woman protester. She sat down and 4 officers bodily carried her to an elevator. This is what it sounded like as protesters blocked the elevator doors from closing and a state patrol officer physically forced them back.
What happened? What did you get arrested for?
Firefighters, AFSCME members, and other protesters stopped at an M&I bank branch across the street from the Capitol Monday to register a protest against the banks being bailed out while working families are being sold out with deep budget cuts. WIND's Jesse Russell was inside the bank branch when security officers rushed into the protesters using force to push them from the bank.
We got sold out!
They got sold out!
We got sold out! M&I Bank has been a consistent foil in the story of the Wisconsin worker uprising. It was directly targeted by the firefighters early on due to bank executives being one of the highest contributors to the gubernatorial campaign of Scott Walker. That ire shifted as news was reported that M&I Bank received a $1.7 billion bailout under President George W. Bush's Toxic Asset Relief Program. 3 years later, and still owing $1.3 billion to American taxpayers, M&I is likely being sold to the Bank of Montreal, and the very same executives that drove the bank to the brink will receive more than $75 million in bonuses. On Monday, protesters returned to the door of the Capitol Square branch of M&I and briefly blocked the entrances, essentially closing the branch to business. Two protesters were arrested in that action.
This newscast made possible in part by the National Education Association and AFSCME.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Your working class radio experience, where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Working hard to make a left. Rich and poverty. For the sun that carry on. Blue devil had his fate. Oh, 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 he's a working class man.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Having a little trouble getting a hold of State Senator Jay Costa. We'll keep that up in maybe the next segment. My favorite porn star politician, Nikki Haley, back in the news. I just think that's the greatest porn name ever for a politician. And with the two K's and the two I's, Nikki Haley, just does it for me, I think. Right? I'm getting that look like, not going there. Well, anyway.
I know your taste in women.
There you go. Well, you know.
You like kinky.
There you go. The South Carolina Supreme Court ruled on Monday, according to Reuters, that our favorite porn governor, who was trying to force the legislators back to work, they're ruling that unconstitutional, saying that it is a violation of the separation of powers. And again, you know, you look at folks like this, who think that, you know, hey, I'm governor, I'm king, or in her case, queen, depending on if, I'm not going there, not making another Wiener joke. No more Anthony Wiener. I want no part of him. I want no part of making jokes. I'm only talking about policy. Anyway, Haley wanted to bring everybody back because they were saying, look, we're going on our regularly scheduled, recess. And we'll get back to that budget when we come back. Other issues down the road. We'll get to it. We'll get to it when it happens. So she tried to force them back, and they said, no. But it really does show that how when you get Republicans in power, they like it to go to their head. And I look at Pawlenty, who says, you know, when Google told me that, we don't have to have a post office. Never mind that little Constitution thing. Never mind that at all. Anyway, the phone line is up and working, and we've got Pennsylvania State Senator Jay Costa on the line. Senator Costa, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, happy to do so, Rick. Good to hear from you, buddy.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking at a couple of things that just got me nuts. This Senate Bill 995, it put up 911, 911 information on the front of the drilling operations. Any gas well that has any gas well there, you got to put the 911 information up. Shouldn't that have been something we did before we allowed them to put up the gas well?
Yeah, there's something I think that certainly should have been considered at the appropriate time. Something that for safety reasons, working with our fire safety and emergency management people, they need to know these locations and the like. So it's important that we get to it, but likely something we should have did on the front end. There's no question.
Yeah, it's like the other one that passed today, Senate Bill 460. And it helped me if I'm wrong here, but it was kind of defining what a drilling lease is. Is that what it is?
That's part of it. I mean, I think it goes to make sure that we are amending an old Oil and Gas Act, if I'm not mistaken, and it addresses some of the concerns that interpretation of exactly what is a well and how it's drilled and all that kind of stuff. I think it's a complicated piece of legislation, but right. Essentially provides for a simple definition, fact of the matter is, so we're all clear that when we start talking about leases and drilling, we know that we're all on the same page in terms of how we define all that.
Yeah, again, that would have been something nice before we allowed them to start putting needles in the ground. Let's talk about this budget, because I just think this budget is just toxic. We're allowing our education, I think we're allowing our education system to crumble like we've allowed our infrastructure in this country, because we don't want to fund it.
There's no question. This budget calls for, as the governor's put into place, and House Republicans have tried to modify it somewhat, but anywhere near where it needs to be, calls for over $1 billion in cuts to education, basic education, in excess of $600 million in higher education cuts, major cuts to other programs along the lines of the health and human service programs, as well as community and economic development programs. We've got a lot of work to do. Senate Democrats have been preaching for the last several weeks that we need to use up some of the surplus that's being provided by our tax collections, our tax revenues, and drive back into the budget in key targeted areas like, for example, as I said, basic education programs, particularly and specifically into something called charter school reimbursement lines and accountability block grants and the tutoring and in higher ed on the education side, but also targeted workforce and job training dollars and community development dollars all need to be restored in this budget, as well as health and human service programs that are going to take cuts, that the cuts will ultimately impact on individuals and the services that people provide. And I'm not talking about the handout services. I'm talking about services that are provided by folks, for example, in places like rape crisis centers and domestic violence centers and places where women can go and men can go for help as it relates to those areas. And those have been experiencing like 10 to 12% cuts when other areas are not impacted. And the final piece of this budget is that there's nothing in the Marcellus community, the drilling community, that allows them to be part of the solution to our budget problem. So we have real problems with this budget, and we think we need to make major changes to it.
Now, there's money. I keep hearing there's the revenue's better than expected. We're moving in the right direction, but there are those out there saying, oh, well, gee, we should have a rainy day fund. And if I remember right, and help me, because maybe I'm wrong, but back when Governor Rendell was there, weren't the same people who were calling for the rainy day fund now the same ones who were saying we should divvy it out?
Well, there are a lot of people who have called for squirreling away a good bit of the money. Our law requires that we're required to put in 25% of our budget surplus into budgetary reserves, into the rainy day fund. We anticipate that right now we're at a $540 million budget surplus. The governor thought we were going to be at $78 million at this point in time. We believe by the end of June 30th that we'll have an excess of $600 million budget surplus, which means those are dollars that we just didn't project that would be coming in. And quite frankly, the May numbers have continued a trend of months where we've experienced increasing revenues, and our expectation is it's going to continue into June and July and August. So we think that we don't need to spend every single penny of those dollars. We need to squirrel away, I think, the money that we are required to, the 150 that we would be required to put into the rainy day fund. But that leaves an additional amount of money that we could then use to restore back into education programs. What school districts are doing across this Commonwealth are three things. One, they're laying off teachers and they're laying off personal staff. They're laying off, cafeteria workers, and they're laying off clerical folks, and they're laying off teachers and administrators as well. Second thing is they're eliminating programs. A lot of places are eliminating full-day kindergarten programs. A whole host of other types of programs that are beneficial to the students and learning are being reduced and eliminated. And finally, school districts are increasing property taxes. So we think that's why we need to take some of that surplus and drive it back into this general fund budget so that we can make sort of lessen the impact, the dramatic impact on the school districts in particular and to our higher education community and to our counties, for example, that provide for a lot of the human service programs in this region.
You know, the three things you laid out there, the property tax issue, again, for me, you saw that coming down the line. So Governor Corbett could say, well, I kept my tax pledge. All your local people, they're the ones who stuck it to you. And ending full-day kindergarten to me just seems dumb. Very short-sighted, having no vision or no leadership. And that scares me.
Oh, it scares a lot of folks. And I think that's been our number one priority as Senate Democrats, trying to make sure that we're able to drive the resources back into those programs, precisely into the Accountability Block Grant Program, the program which most of this Commonwealth has used those dollars for early learning. whether it be full-day kindergarten or whether it be in, like, in the city of Pittsburgh where I come from, we use a significant chunk of money. I think it's like $9 million we received in accountability block grant solely for our 3 to 5-year-olds to provide them that education at that early learning stage that is most effective. And every single study that you look at demonstrates that it's an successful investment. Early learning dollars are some of the best dollars that we can make in terms of an investment in this Commonwealth and across this country. And we're going to go in the other direction. I think it doesn't make sense to our caucus or to me.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense at all. And the last thing you talked about was laying off teachers, which I think, again, another visionless move, because eventually I think you have people stop getting into the profession, especially the way they've been just brutalized and beaten in the media. But again, once you lay those people off, it's going to cost us, the taxpayers, even more, because we've got an unemployment compensation problem.
We have two levels of unemployment compensation. We've got more and more folks who are going on unemployment. And the second problem is we've got a major trust fund issue we have to deal with as we go forward, which will likely be part of the fall conversation, the money we owe back to the federal government. So we've got major issues along those lines. But you're correct. It discourages people from wanting to get into the business of teaching our students, which is something we need to continue in the pipeline. The second thing is that you end up in a situation where you've got school districts now that are forced to raise the student-teacher ratio. We've been working, again, with the accountability block grant and working towards smaller class sizes so that we have a situation where teachers can provide additional time and effort to individualize their teaching to their students. All this is going to do is increase that ratio to a higher number that makes it more difficult to manage a classroom, and it lessens the individualized attention that a teacher may be able to give to a student to allow that particular student to continue to achieve. So that's another issue that we feel we need to recognize and deal with. I mean, every study you look at, again, tells you that the smaller the class size, the better off the performance of the student in the schoolhouse and the school building. And we need to go in that direction.
I'm right there with you. And the other part of the unemployment thing, and again, we've been talking about Scott Perry's House Bill 916, which, mm-hmm. again, a handwritten bill by the Chamber of Commerce and by the NFIB, a very corporate bill, the big sloppy wet kiss that they got there. And we're seeing some of the really draconian stuff, some of the cannibalistic stuff leaking into House Bill 1030. But we've got some problems in how the unemployment is being raised, because we haven't seen a raise in the employee side or the employer side in 25 years.
Yeah, that issue is being vetted in the House right now. We passed out of the Senate Bill 1030, and I think that was something that was acceptable to all parties involved because it was a reasonable, responsible piece of legislation. I've not been able to follow today what happened on the House side, Rick, but I will tell you, there have been changes to it. We don't necessarily agree with those changes. And more importantly, what it does is it makes it difficult for us to get that extended unemployment benefits for those 40-some thousand folks who would lose benefits unless we don't get something done by June 11th or make the legislation retroactive to allow us the opportunity to continue those benefits to those individuals who, through no fault of their own, are not able to work right now.
Yeah, and again, you know, during this time when the economy is in the shape that it's in, do we really want to take money out of the economy, out of people's hands, who are going to spend it and hand it to people like the drilling industry? Look, if times were great, maybe you could start talking about that. Maybe we could let the drilling industry go. Maybe we could leave the money laundering scheme of the Delaware loophole go. Maybe. But we're talking about cutting children's futures. We're talking about throwing granny, disabled people into the streets. I'm sorry, it's shared sacrifice time. It's time for folks to pitch in.
You're exactly right, and that's what this budget does not do. It doesn't provide for shared sacrifices, despite the fact that at the outset the administration said we needed to have shared sacrifice. So we're working to try to create that, have the dialogue to make sure we get to that end, and we're going to continue to fight to be able to do that.
Right, last question I've got for you.
Sure.
Do you think the Republicans are going to get the budget done on time?
I think we will get it done on time. We're being told, and it appears that we're going to be the week of the 20th, June 20th, that we will pass a bill in the Senate here that will then pass a budget, likely along party lines. The Republicans will vote for it. Democrats will likely all vote against it. And then it'll go over to the House. And the House will have to decide, probably on the 22nd or 23rd, it'll get to the House. And they'll have to decide either up or down. We're going to make some changes in the Senate. And we've been working and pushing to try to do that. The question becomes whether the House would accept the changes and the increase in spending that we want to do, that we passed in the Senate. If they do that, then the governor, they'll concur in the vote and go to the governor by Friday of that week, the 24th or 25th. If not, then it goes into a conference. If they did not concur, it'll go into a conference committee, and we're likely looking at a couple-week period before we can get that all worked out and resolved. So the important thing is what happens the week of the 20th. If we don't get it done by the end of that week, I think you are likely to see that it's going to go bump up against June 30th. And maybe bleed into July if that happens.
That'll be interesting to see because
one
of the things that they ran on is we're going to get things done on time.
Yep, yep.
And with massive majorities, you would think that they can do whatever they want. They should be able to agree on something.
Well, then, these budget processes, there's a variety of factors to go into how you put together a general fund budget for a commonwealth or any type of a large government. And it's easy from the outside looking in thinking, why can't y'all agree on something? But there are a lot of factors. We're very diverse. We're a very large state, and we have a lot of folks, regardless of what party you're on, that have different interests in some of these areas, and that's what's playing out right now. So it's not uncommon that we end up in the process like this as we go forward.
No, I understand. You know, I got to be honest with you. I couldn't vote for this budget. There's just no way, no way, shape, or how.
Yep.
Never going to happen.
Especially when you got over $500 million sitting on the table, as well as, and what people don't talk about, Rick, is that we have $500 million, $500 million, and money out of this current fiscal year that we're not spending. $500 million, $387 came from the federal government from the jobs and the education bill that we did, in excess of $100 million in lapses, as well as another $100 and some million from changes to a variety of tax programs. So we've got an excess of $500 million there, as well as the $540 million budget surplus. And again, we recognize we're in tough times. We can't spend everything. We have to be prudent in terms of how we go forward. But clearly, we can take some of that money and drive it back into the budget and utilize it for those areas that we've made significant cuts, like education, like health and human service programs, including the reimbursements to hospitals, and like workforce development and job training and economic development programs. That's what we need to focus on.
Absolutely. And for me, before we start talking about taking children's futures away, maybe raise some revenue like I would do at the Smith kitchen table.
I hear you.
Senator Costa, I appreciate your time. It's always great to have you on the program.
Happy to do so, Rick. It was nice meeting you this week, too.
All
right. Take care.
Good seeing you. We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. What do you think of this budget? We're right back after this.
It's money. Work it out. The people of today so fine and so rough. Their argument for freedom is how much would it cost to work it all out. It's money. Work it out. Money. Money. All around. Seems to guide me before it drags you down. Down. Acting a fly. Seeing a sign. Wandering jungle hunters with one on faded eye. Mother Nature's army retreats to hide and fly. So what's it all about?
We're smart policy. And sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
Michigan's working families are mighty hard hit these days, but the state's new governor, Rick Snyder, has reached out with a helping hand. Not for workers, though. Instead, he handed out a 60% tax cut to corporations. To help pay for this giveaway, he snuck into law a provision that takes away 6 weeks of jobless benefits for out-of-work Michiganders. Plus, he intends to tax the pensions of working-class retirees. Where do today's far right-wing governors get such far-out, nasty, anti-middle-class ideas? Directly from an extensive network of corporate-backed wonk shops set up in every state. They grind out extremist schemes to eliminate public services for regular people and sever corporations from any responsibility for the common good of our society. In Michigan, the group is called the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Richly funded by such multi-billionaire families as the Koch brothers, the Waltons of Walmart, and the DeVosses of the Amway fortune, Mackinac vigorously pushes the billionaire's plutocratic agenda. It's a vehement opponent of unions, for example, and it pushes privatization of everything from schools to highways. In January, just as Snyder was taking office, Mackinac's dogmatists published 4 recommendations for turning Michigan into a corporate laissez-faire land. They included a tyrannical proposal to let the governor seize control of local governments and install corporate overseers to cancel union contracts, rewrite budgets, sell off public assets, and bypass or even dismiss local elected officials. This monster is now law in Michigan. Indeed, Snyder adopted all four of Mackinaw's proposals. This is Jim Hightower saying, these secretive front groups are modern-day Trojan horses, allowing a few corporate billionaires to come into state governments and seize control of public policy, perhaps even in your state.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.com.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
To the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Sean put on our Facebook page, and again, you can join our Facebook page, facebook.com, Rick Smith or the Rick Smith Show, right there. You can join in on the conversation. And, you know, interestingly enough, he points out the fact that in Pennsylvania, only 119 corporations pay the 9.9% corporate tax rate. The rest of the corporations pay the state's 3.24 personal income tax because they're labeled an LLC. 85% of the corporations in the state take advantage of our friendly corporate tax loophole. 85%. 119. And those are the really big ones. And those are usually the ones who they can open the P.O. box there in Delaware and loophole their money and launder their money right out of the state. How very nice for them. Interesting story, is something to root for. You know, for the longest time, I've been saying that the bank robbers have no creativity. You know, they're just bad. They walk in and they have their stick-up note written on the back of their an envelope with their address on it. You know, dumb stuff like that. Or they go in, they fill out a bank application and put their real name and give them their driver's license to have photocopied. You know, real brainiacs. Well, in Columbus, Ohio, the mullet bandit has knocked off what I guess is his fourth bank. He knocked off one May 5th, May 18th, May 27th, and just the other day on Monday, got another one. Again, you know, hey, I'm going to be honest. I'm not rooting against him. It's about time somebody stick it to the man. But here he walked into this latest bank, and they knew as soon as he walked in, there's the mullet bandit, and, yeah, well, there you go. They got ripped off. Speaking of being ripped off, again, you know, another guy who screwed us on healthcare, Evan Bayh. You a big fan of Evan Bayh?
Absolutely not.
You're not a big fan of Evan Bayh?
No, he's Republican light.
Yeah, well, guess what Evan did today?
I know what he did.
Evan is now an advisor with the International Hit Squad at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Are you surprised? I'm not. Because, you know, you look at the swinging door that's been going on with our government, where someone like Evan Bayh, who has held up all progress for working people, but has been very business friendly. He gave up his job as a senator, and he's probably going to make four or five times the amount being an advisor, you know, and having to deal with all those people. You know, those constituents can be such a pain in the neck. It's so much easier to deal with a think tank environment or an advocacy group or a terrorist group like the Chamber of Commerce.
Well, if you remember when he retired, he made this emotional speech about how he was disillusioned, and he mentioned a recent Supreme Court decision which pretty much takes limits off the amount of money that corporations can give. Isn't it ironic that now he's going to work for the biggest offender?
And what I find hysterical is when he was retiring from the Senate, he said he wants to go on and be a, he wants to, you know, do honorable work. He wants to go on into a honorable line of work. So what was he doing? He's a paid contributor for Fox News. Honorable? Are you freaking kidding me? but here he is. He's going to be our guy. He's going to be the guy at the Chamber of Commerce. He's going to make sure that the impacts of overregulation on small business and entrepreneurs is fought back against. And again, you know, they got the big bucks. And what's funny to me, again, you know, I love the swinging door. Andy Card, former chief of staff, under the little shrub, right there at the Chamber of Commerce. They have no political allegiance. It's all about the Benjamins. It's all about the green, man.
I don't know if you remember his dad. He was well respected. Good Democrat for decades. His son leaves a lot to be desired, unfortunately.
So now here's the thing. And the reason I put these two stories together, there's the mullet bandit who, you know, he's probably gotten, of these four bank robberies, maybe 10 grand tops. Because, you know, the woman at the window, she's not sitting on piles of cash. You may get, you know, a couple of hundred bucks, a couple thousand tops. So in the four heists that he will spend when he's caught, and trust me, he will be caught. So when they catch him for this mere 10, 15 grand, maybe when he gets caught, he will spend a good portion of the rest of his existence in a very small gray cell. He's about 30 years old. So he will spend a very long time as a guest of the state. I look at somebody like Evan Bay, who has done as much as he could possibly do to hold up health care reform, to hold up any progress forward, because after all, we're a moderate Democrat, or basically a moderate Republican, however you want to look at it. And he's going to get a job working for the Chamber of Commerce. It's sickening, is what it is. Absolutely sickening.
Can I ask you a question about the mullet bandit? Why is he calling that?
Because he has a mullet.
He has a mullet.
Yeah, hairdo.
Oh.
Now, so bad 80s.
He didn't put anything over his head.
No, he's got a Seattle baseball cap. He's got a big glasses on. Very very distinctive looking.
It amazes me why people, I'm sure he realizes his picture's being taken.
Yeah, but he's got big sunglasses on. He's got a Seattle Mariners baseball cap. Mm. He's got a large black bag. He looks like anybody with a bad haircut. And, who knows? Maybe the mullet is fake.
True.
Who
That's
knows?
True.
Who cares? To me, I don't care if they ever catch him. I know. Somebody's going to go, but, he's breaking the law. Yeah. Look what these criminals on Wall Street are getting.
The difference is this guy's using a gun. The other people who use the law.
Maybe he's not. Maybe he's not using. Maybe he's just saying he's got a gun. And again, a couple of grand we're talking. The people who backed up the Brinks trucks or the big 53-foot trailers up to the Fort Knox and emptied out our treasury and emptied out Wall Street, they walked away scot-free. The people who really robbed the banks, the ones who heisted the wealth of the nation from you and me, well, they walked away.
You're telling me he's only getting a few thousand?
Yeah. I mean, those tellers, they don't keep but a couple thousand right there. Anything larger, you got to go back and get the manager, take you back into the safe. They don't leave piles of cash.
If he's convicted of at least four counts, he's probably looking at 15 to 20 years, you would think.
Probably
would,
more than that.
You would think that he would do his homework. If you're going to prison, for a couple thousand dollars, I'm saying.
Well, it shows the desperation. It shows the desperation. Anyway, and talking about desperation, lost opportunities. You look at all this Bush handout money. What could we have done had the little shrub not given that money away? When we come back, we're going to talk with Zed Jelani from Think Progress about what could have been had the little shrub not done what he'd done. We're back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
The following message is brought to you by SEIU Local 668.
My name is Lewis. I help senior citizens get the services they need. I work for you, the taxpayers, in the Area Agency on Aging. Our senior population is growing. Their incomes are shrinking. Their need for government services is increasing, all at the same time. Funding for these services is not keeping pace, which means long waiting lists, huge caseloads, and more seniors at risk. We all know that these are tough economic times, But who wants to see our senior citizens suffer? They did their part. They worked hard and paid their taxes. Now it's our turn to make sure they get the services they need. Please contact your state legislators today and demand that they respect our senior citizens and vote to increase funding for programs that protect them.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated, professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
Yeah, and he believes in tax cuts for the wealthy, deregulation, believes in making sure that corporate tax rates are low, because that's the only way, you know, God can create jobs, evidently. At least that's what they keep telling us. And if you look at the tax rates, lowest in 60 years, the numbers keep popping up. We're one of the lowest countries in the industrialized world as far as taxation on their citizens, and yet here we are still talking about spending cuts, when we have given away a couple of trillion dollars, thanks to the little shrub. And to that point, my next guest, Zed Jelani, wrote a great piece over at thinkprogress.org, the $2.5 trillion tragedy, basically going through what we could have had we not given that money away. Zed, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, I'm glad to be here, Rick.
You know, I look at this $2.5 trillion. How did you come up with $2.5 trillion?
Okay, so basically there were two sets of tax cuts passed by Bush and by Congress. There was one set in 2001, and there was one set in 2003. 2001 was slightly smaller. In 2003, the CBO and a few other government agencies do estimates of the costs, and basically I added them up. And since between 2001 and 2010. It's been about $2.5 trillion that's basically been taken out of our national checkbook to pay for these tax cuts.
So we've made the unafflicted more unafflicted, but the rest of us kind of worse off.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, can the average American really say that they're better off because they got a few hundred dollars, you know, back in their paycheck from tax cuts? And of course, wealthier people got much more.
But here's the thing, and I've had this conversation with people. They remember getting a letter in the mail saying, hey, look out for your Bush handout. It's coming in the mail. And I got to give Bush credit. He laid that whole thing out really well in a very good campaign style. Sent out a letter first, which cost, I think, about $18 million to send out, telling you that your $300 was in the mail and to keep an eye out for it. And then eventually it came and you were happy. And I have friends who were, no president ever gave me money before. That's why I liked him.
No, I mean, I think that's exactly the strategy, is that, Bush almost was trying to be like a left winger. You know, he's saying, I'm redistributing wealth. Look, I'm giving you a few hundred dollars in a paycheck through this tax cut. Look at me. I'll have more money in your bank accounts now, and everything will be great. And, of course, we know it didn't really turn out that way.
But what's it cost us? I mean, you ran through some numbers. 122 million children we could have had health care for 10 years. 49 million people we could have gotten health care for, low-income workers. A whole bunch of things that we could have done that, because we had to give away big tax handouts to the very, very top, we didn't do.
No, I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, there's this famous phrase from Margaret Thatcher, who was a leader of the Conservatives, who was Prime Minister of Britain. She said, there is no alternative. And then that's what Conservatives want us to think about these tax cuts today, that, you know, we did this as the only thing we could do to help the economy, and, you know, that's that. But the fact of the matter is that there actually were alternatives. You know, I ran some numbers, spent a lot of time with my calculator, and basically figured out some other things that we could have bought for the same amount of money. We could have given 43 million college students Pell Grants, maximum Pell Grants of $5,500. We could have, you know, like you said, given 122 million children low-income health coverage, which basically would wipe out the scandal in this country of millions of children not having any health coverage, you know, permanently end that in our country for the tax, for many times over for the price of these tax cuts. We could have hired, you know, 4 million firefighters every year for 10 years. We could have, you know, retrofitted 144 million homes for wind power every single year. We could have retrofitted 54 million homes to run on solar power every single year. I mean, you know, we can debate the Bush tax cuts as much as we want, but I don't think anyone can look at these numbers and really say that what we got was better than getting some of these things.
Especially when you look at the job creation numbers, because Bush, you know, Bush famously said,
with a robust package of at least $550 billion in across-the-board tax relief, we will help create more than a million new jobs.
And that didn't happen.
No, exactly. And, you know, one of the major reasons it didn't happen is because, you know, the tax cuts were so tilted towards the top. And the top doesn't tend to spend that money right back into the economy the way that the bottom and the middle do. You know, they tend to invest their money in untouchable bank accounts. They tend to send a lot of money overseas. I mean, it's really inefficient. It's good. You know, one of the most efficient ways that you can actually, you know, grow the economy is by hiring teachers. You know, we could have hired, you know, more than 3.5 million elementary school teachers every single year for the cost of what we spent on these tax cuts. We could have had, you know, far better schools, more schools, smaller classrooms, you know, safer environments for children. You know, we could have done so many things. We could have funded 31 million Head Start slots for children, for poor children, a program that's proven to do an incredible amount for the economy to get these kids into a place where they can start being in a safe and good learning environment. But instead, you know, we gave away these tax cuts, and, you know, everyone who's listening right now can just imagine what's happened as a result, and it's not good.
Yeah, you know, one of the Tea Party frames is that we're, you know, of course, the meaning of team, taxed enough already. The frame is that, you know, we're the highest taxed nation in the country. We're just overtaxed. The poor, you know, the poor nation, we're just overtaxed. But when you look at the numbers, across the industrialized world, we're nowhere close to being overtaxed.
No, I mean, I think that's an excellent point, Rick, that you just brought up. We're actually, in the industrialized world, like you said, in the OECD countries, the rich and successful countries, we're actually almost at the bottom when it comes to our sort of our tax responsibilities. You know, we used to be much higher, but we actually, especially on the wealthiest people, we actually have some of the lowest tax rates in about a generation, you know, 40 or 50 years, even longer actually now. And that's really remarkable that, you know, we hear so much bleating about deficits and saying, oh, we have to cut back on Pell Grants, we have to cut back on Head Start and all these programs and investments, and yet we have such low taxes, especially on the wealthiest people in the country. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, the conservatives should be more honest and just say, you know, we don't want to pay our taxes because we don't believe in our patriotic duties. They shouldn't pretend it's good for the country because it's clearly not.
Right. Here's the thing. You know, you listen to Pawlenty, who's, you know, a presidential candidate, saying we need to lower the tax rates even further. And you guys have run some numbers. Michael Linden, one of the guys over there at the Center for American Progress, ran some numbers and said, look, you know, this is going to not only make our deficits worse by doing what Pawlenty wants, which is lowering taxes even further, especially on the wealthy and on corporations, but it's going to add to our debt for a generation to come.
No, exactly. I believe Linden actually found that the tax plan that Pawlenty is sort of putting forward would actually cost three times as much as the Bush tax cuts, you know, which means, you know, this is a man who's running his entire campaign on, oh, we have too large of a deficit, our debt is too great, and look, let me go ahead and triple what we did with the Bush taxes, let me triple the problem with the debt, and you know, actually the tax brackets that he's proposing are actually historically low in some cases, in some of the different places where he's making cuts, by saying, you know, the people at the top who've been able to get all this wealth, and, you know, while the rest of us are suffering, you know, he apparently thinks they don't have it easy enough.
Yeah, I mean, I look at some of the other stuff that is going on, and I look at Jan Schakowsky's bill, that tax fairness bill, and to me, that seems like a step in the right direction. Instead of going and cutting Social Security and destroying Medicaid and ruining Medicare, maybe start, you know, bringing in some more revenue. Because, you know, we heard Romney last week saying, oh, we want a 20% cap of GDP. You got Pawlenty who said, I'm going to one-up you. I want 18, and I want a constitutional amendment at 18. And again, you know, not talking about revenue at all.
No, I mean, I absolutely agree. And I think Jen Schakowsky actually has a great bill. And her, for people who don't know, she would basically bring the upper income on. She would create a many new bracket, first of all. So it wouldn't just be about $250,000. Actually go into the millions. And the people who are in some large amount of millions, you know, they'd be taxed at 49%, and then left would be 48, 47. And she basically leave most of the middle class out of any of this, but go after the top. And, I think that's a great idea. Even if we enacted her plan, the richest people in this country would still be paying a lot less than they did under Nixon, under Kennedy, under Ford, under most of the 20th century.
Under that socialist.
They'd still honestly be getting a really good deal, right?
Yeah, under that socialist Eisenhower, where it was 92%.
Right. No, I think that's what's really wild, is that we had people who at their time were conservative Republicans who understood the value of when we have these problems with deficits, but we still have to make these great investments in our country to lift this all up. But sometimes people have to pay a little more. It's their patriotic duty. And that by not doing it, basically you're forcing, you know, Main Street to suffer when you're starting to cut back on Pell Grants, when you're cutting back on Head Start and food stamps and investments in roads and bridges and infrastructure. I mean, basically, you're asking us to choose between, you know, most of us in this country who are working really hard to get by in our families and Main Street, or you're asking us, you know, or you're going to ask a little more, of the very wealthy who won't miss it and who are actually still going to pay a lot less than they did for most of our modern history.
Yeah, how did we lose that frame, though? I mean, because, you know, the right has really, you know, clamped down to this. We need to cut. You know, we need to dump those 250, like the guy from Georgia said, well, if we default on our debt, we'll just lay out, we'll get rid of those 250,000 government workers. They should get real jobs anyway. How did we lose that frame?
Yeah, you know, actually, you bring up that congressman, Paul Brown. He was actually, I went into the university in his district. That guy's wild. But anyway, I think if you take a poll of Americans, you ask them honestly about taxes, generally they do side with progressives. They do think the rich should pay more. But I don't think most Americans understand exactly how extreme the situation has become, that they don't understand that the rich are actually paying the lowest that they have in a generation, that the gap between what the middle class and the rich are paying has actually been narrowed in the last, like, 30 or 35 years. And, you know, I think what the right is really, really good at is doing is that they're good at obscuring the issue of class. And it's not really just the right. It's like our entire, like, elite culture and pop culture sort of obscures the issues of class. Like, they don't talk about, you know, how many people go in this country go without. They don't talk about the fact that most people in this country are working harder than they ever had before, and yet they're not really getting the gains for it. You know, real wages have stagnated for, you know, 3 decades now. So I think a lot of the way that we push back is we say this: look, we're one country. We love our country. We want to lift everyone up. We want to live in a great country, not in a country, you know, that has those sort of old-style class systems that you'd see in a Dickens novel, right? You know, we're that great country that in the, you know, middle of the 20th century loved the world, had a huge, robust middle class, had very strong investments in Main Street in the middle class, and asked the rich to pay a responsible fair share instead of, you know, going after kids on Head Starts and you know, poor college students getting Pell Grants.
Yeah, and, you know, I look at what James Carville said the other night. I said at some point he can envision an uprising. And he didn't say what an uprising he was talking about. But, you know, I take that to meaning people getting into the streets one way or another, you know, some kind of disruption.
No, I mean, I think that's exactly actually what we saw with Wisconsin. I don't think anyone ever imagined, you know, if I talked to people 6 months ago, I don't think anyone would imagine that thousands of people would be in the streets and that we'd be seeing probably the, you know, half the Republican Party in Wisconsin facing recall elections because they went after workers' rights like this. I think people are waking up. They're understanding that they're starting to understand their own power. I mean, this is a country that's incredibly free. I think that's one reason why a lot of people come here. And people have to understand their own power. And once people start to organize, you know, they can beat back basically the forces of organized money, which are basically the primary factor keeping us down right now.
Yeah, excellent point. Zed Jelani, I appreciate your time. ThinkProgress.org, the website. Great work you guys do there.
Yeah, thanks so much.
All right, have a good night. We're going to take a quick break. Right back, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Center of the-
the working class majority. Rick Smith.
You've reached Jenny in the accounts receivable department of Dent Supply International. I can't come to the phone right now. Please leave a message and I'll return your call as soon as I'm available.
Jenny was in constant pain and missing too much work.
I wasn't reliable. No matter how hard I tried, I couldn't be what I wanted to be. I knew that I could do my job better. I knew that I could be a better mom. I could be a better wife. But my body wasn't letting me.
Fortunately, Jenny's employer has Capital Blue Cross. And Capital gave Jenny a whole set of services called Better Health Works. Jenny filled out a profile, got online coaching, and called a nurse line.
She talked me out of a very dark time because I didn't know what else to do. Since I had my surgery, now I can give my employer and my family 110% of me.
Capital's Amy Montgomery is happy that Jenny is happy.
It feels great that Capital Blue Cross was able to help Jenny this way.
We really believe in what we do, and I think that that's one of the things that makes us successful. I think it's a perfect example of when you care more, you do more.
Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
Don't really care about the economy. Don't care much about democracy. I'm a member of the GOP, trying to form a plutocracy. But if I can just bamboozle you, and you'll share my narrow point of view, what a wonderful world this would be.
Yes, it would be a wonderful world. If only you didn't have to worry about facts. You know, if only you didn't know anything about history. If you really believed that Paul Revere was riding down the street shooting his guns like Wyatt Earp. He's down there, bang, 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 bang. Get up! They're coming for your guns! Bang, 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 bang! Or the way Sarah Palin sees it going on. A new ABC News, Washington Post poll. Released today, not good news for que sera sera. No. Nearly two-thirds of the people polled definitely would not vote for que sera sera, even if she did decide to run. The number of, and this is what's amazing to me, 42% of Republicans said they wouldn't vote for her. That pretty much tells you, Kesara, it's time to pack the bags, time to, you know, maybe keep that dog and pony show going a little bit longer, maybe just a little. Also, Michelle Bachmann, she's gotten herself a new campaign person, a strategist, Ed Rollins, who is a big name guy. Also said that Sarah's just not serious. Now, the quitter governor, not there. And I got to be honest, what worries me about Bachmann, she can raise the money. She can raise big money and in a hurry. Our buddy Herman Cain was back in the news. Herman. Herman says he'd be okay with appointing a gay cabinet member when he becomes president because they wouldn't impose Sharia law. And I'm trying to figure that one out. Okay, Hermie. You do what you got to do there, brother.
Can't make that up.
And you really can't make it up because he's a gift that keeps on giving.
That's a comment you say, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, he is what he is. He was speaking at the Family Leader Presidential Lecture Series in Pella, Iowa, where he said, and again, you know, I can't make this stuff up. He said that he would not sign any bill that came to his desk that was longer than three pages. See, because his logic is he says, and this is his quote, engage the people. See, engage the people. Well, hold on. Engage the people. Engage the people. Don't try and pass a 2,700-page bill, even if they didn't read it. Even they didn't read it. You and I, we didn't have time to read it. You're too busy to live, sending our kids to school. And that's why I'm only going to allow small bills. 3 pages. You can read that over the dinner table.
I guess if by some miracle he would win, that means that the vast majority of the bills that are passed in Congress, he won't sign.
Is this guy just nuts or is it me?
But that Sharia law comment, who is sleepless at night worrying about Sharia law in this country?
Hermie. Yeah, you got Palente saying we shouldn't have a post office because Google told him not to, even though, again, it's in the Constitution.
We don't need to rewrite the Constitution of the United States, rewrite it. We need to reread the Constitution and enforce the Constitution. And I know that there are some people that are not going to do that, so for the benefit of those that are not going to read it because they don't want us to go by the Constitution, there's a little section in there that talks about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
I hear that, and I just want to... And now, look, I understand. Okay, you made a gaffe. All right, a simple gaffe, but...
When you get to the part about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, don't stop right there. Keep reading.
Keep reading.
So that's when it says, when any form of government becomes destructive of those ideals, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it. We've got some altering and some abolishing to do.
You know, he gives a good speech. You got to give him credit for that. Even though he's dead flat wrong, even he's off the wrong, he's off on a different script, on a different planet, he does deliver, he has a very good delivery.
I saw the speech, and he was... he was emotional, and in the heat of the moment, I guess he just let his mouth run.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, hey, we all have that every once in a while. We all do that.
I mean, I guess you have to look at Herman Cain as incremental. I mean, compared to some of the other crazies,
he's not all that bad.
Yeah. No, he's nuts. What are you talking about? He's not all that bad.
Compared to some of the others.
He's
your girlfriend?
Nuts.
Are you saying he's crazier than your girlfriend?
Yes.
Michelle?
Yes.
Oh, that's debatable.
Anyway, a new poll out has the former governor of Massachusetts, Mitzi, pulling ahead of the president in a poll by the Washington Post and ABC News. Obama's down 3 to Mitzi. Again, this is going to be a long race, but it's 49-46 in the Romney-Obama head-to-head. But Obama does then whip everybody else in the field. He whips Gingrich, Pawlenty, Bachman, Huntsman, and, of course, K. Sarah. Sarah, no mention of Tricky Ricky Santorum. None whatsoever. And, again, you know, is that a snub? Did they snub the Rickster? Did they snub our little guy there? And I got to be honest, I think that whole Virginia, the house in Virginia, and the fact that the Penn Hill School District had to pay for his kids' education while they lived in Virginia, I think all that stuff is going to come back up because it has to. He's not going to win Pennsylvania. I don't see how he can because he's – if you look at the Toomey race, the one thing that Toomey was very, very good at doing is moderating the insanity. He was able to tone it down, pull it back a little bit, so he didn't look as crazy as he is.
Absolutely.
He didn't look as I shouldn't say crazy. He didn't look as extreme, and we know he is. Santorum, on the other hand, flat out nuts. I mean, you know, that whole story about, you know, when his wife had the miscarriage and they took the dead baby home to be with that, that's just kind of creepy.
It's kind of morbid.
It's kind of creepy.
Well, I can tell you this. I heard it on the talk shows. I mean, this is ironic. And it was more than one, right after another. All day they were talking about Santorum, and guess what? I don't think there was one positive call. And a couple of them said, look, you know, I can't support him. I mean, he doesn't even live in this state, and he's coming across as if he's the big champion of the state of Pennsylvania. He doesn't even live here, you know. To start off on a false premise, that just alienates people. And by the way, did you catch his speech, Rick? He talked about D-Day and those people that fought in D-Day. They were fighting for the right to repudiate, be free of Obamacare. Well, there's a couple facts that, you know, I think should be interjected. One, like his commander, the commander-in-chief of those troops, had advocated the national health care, FDR, and the British, our British allies, and probably our French allies, the Free French at that time, prior to the takeover of Nazi Germany, they had a national health care. So there's some things that just don't make a lot of sense. And I think, quite frankly, that's a cheap shot. I find to use D-Day as a reference point to knock a national health care program, it just doesn't sit right with me, right?
But he's all about himself, man. It has nothing to do with any of the other stuff. It's all about Tricky Ricky. And look, I truly believe he's not in this. I don't think he's delusional enough to think he's got a shot. I really don't. I think this is the stepping stone that's going to get him another book deal, that's going to keep him on the speaking tours so that he can keep having a job. Look, at the end of this, most of those people who've thrown their hat into the ring, they know there's no way in a cold day in Hades they're going to come anywhere close. But it's about getting their name out there and catching the attention, because if you can push the message far enough towards the Kochs, maybe they hire you. Maybe they make you a fellow of one of their Tea Party think tanks.
Or they write a book and their friends buy a couple thousand, and all of a sudden you're a top seller.
Yeah,
because your rich benefactors bought the books.
Because the Heritage Foundation bought a skid or a truckload.
Which is exactly what happened to Sean Hannity when they said, oh, top-selling book. Yeah. I thought, Sean Hannity, are we talking about the same person? Well,
In fact, we're going to an ice cream social with Sean Hannity on Friday, maybe, I think it is. Can't wait to see the little baby Jesus himself. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. Right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
History. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about the science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I need you. And if you fall for all the crap I spew, what a wonderful world this would be.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
It's The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Madison firefighters led a no-business-as-usual march at Wisconsin's state capitol Monday as the state Supreme Court heard arguments on whether or not the bill gutting public worker collective bargaining was passed illegally. Police arrested five people for alleged disorderly conduct. The state budget, with its heavy cuts to education and other public services, is being taken up by the legislature against the backdrop of continued protests and Walkerville, the protest tent city that began near the Capitol on Saturday in Madison. Former U.S. Senator Russ Feingold walked with Walkerville protesters on Monday in a show of solidarity for labor and against Governor Walker's budget cuts. Inside the Capitol, police arrested an unidentified young woman protester. She sat down and four officers bodily carried her to an elevator. This is what it sounded like as protesters blocked the elevator doors from closing and a state patrol officer physically forced them back.
What happened? What did you get arrested for?
Firefighters, AFSCME members, and other protesters stopped at an M&I bank branch across the street from the Capitol Monday to register a protest against the banks being bailed out while working families are being sold out with deep budget cuts. WIND's Jesse Russell was inside the bank branch when security officers rushed into the protesters using force to push them from the bank.
M&I Bank has been a consistent foil in the story of the Wisconsin worker uprising. It was directly targeted by the firefighters early on, due to bank executives being one of the highest contributors to the gubernatorial campaign of Scott Walker. That ire shifted as news was reported that M&I Bank received a $1.7 billion bailout under President George W. Bush's Toxic Asset Relief Program. 3 years later, and still owing $1.3 billion to American taxpayers, M&I is likely being sold to the Bank of Montreal, and the very same executives that drove the bank to the brink will receive more than $75 million in bonuses. On Monday, protesters returned to the door of the Capitol Square branch of M&I and briefly blocked the entrances, essentially closing the branch to business. Two protesters were arrested in that action.
This newscast made possible in part by the National Education Association and AFSCME.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Of course, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. NPR had an interesting story today on healthcare and the military. And the headline was Healthcare Costs, New Threat to U.S. Military. And they're going through and talking about the fact that the costs of healthcare for the military, because of the wars, obviously, and because they had promised people in the past, you know, the people who fought in Vietnam and before, that they would get health care, the costs are rising. And, of course, we haven't been funding it at an adequate level for years, so they've been behind and struggling for some time. But here again, it's growing larger and larger and larger. And this one general, which, again, you know, he's one of the guys out there trying to push this idea that, well, you know, we need to start looking at the rising costs, which again probably means cutting people off of health care, rationing care, destroying the VA system as we know it. He says we in the Department of Defense are on the same path that General Motors found itself on. So they're comparing the U.S. military to General Motors, which again I just find remarkable. But the idea is what they're saying is that, you know, General Motors didn't start out as a healthcare company that occasionally built an automobile, but he says that's what the Defense Department's turning into. It's into a benefits company that occasionally kills a terrorist. And I'm trying to grasp the rationale. These are the people who are fighting and dying for your country. They're the ones who are injured and maimed and all of this stuff. Are you saying that we shouldn't be taking care of them? I'm kind of confused on all of this. And you've got Robert Gates, you know, the defense secretary, you know, kind of chiming in saying, you know what, we're going to spend an awful lot of money on health care in the coming decade. The past decade, we've seen health care costs in the military double, about $52.5 billion next year for health care for retirees and for the injured folks. $52 billion, which I didn't think is really all that much for, considering we are fighting two major wars and we have thousands of people who are injured and maimed and need to be taken care of. Just not getting it. But they're saying that the average federal worker who's not in the military pays about $4,000 a year for their health care coverage. The average cost for someone in the military with TRICARE is $460. Now understand what they're talking about doing here. The same thing I hear the radical right wings talking about state workers. So it's greedy state workers who only pay, you know, 2 or 3% for their health care. When I've got to pay 10%, they should have to pay what I pay. Are they really going to try and do with the people that they've put up on pedestals and called heroes? Are they really going to try that with the military personnel? Saying that your health care you only pay $460 a year for somehow is too generous and you need to pay the $4,000 that the average federal government worker pays? I mean, is that remarkable or what, Jake?
Absolutely.
But again, where does it come from? Where's it coming from? American Enterprise Institute. Radical right-wing think tank. All of this stuff's coming out of these radical right think tanks. And it's one of these things where you go, the military guy pays about $5 a month for family coverage. And, you know, I'm not against that. Probably not a bad thing. But the think tank person says, well, why should I have to pay for them? Let me be the one to remind them. You're the one who keeps saying they're fighting for our freedoms. What's the cost of our freedom? What's that worth?
Well, you know, I do believe the cost of the wars has been underestimated. I mean, I can remember several years ago they were projecting. And here's where it ties in exactly what we're talking about with health care for veterans, right? It was projected long-term cost of the wars between $3 and $4 trillion. And when you look at the cost of health care and you look at the number of veterans coming back that are either wounded or have severe mental and emotional problems, the cost keeps adding up and up and up.
I mean, I am just, it's remarkable to me how these people can stop on a dime and change directions. You know, first they're the heroes, they're fighting for our freedom, photo ops with everybody with big bulges in our drawers. You know, mission accomplished banner, and now we're talking, well, they're greedy. They want health care for their family. How dare they? I mean, really? Is that where we're going with this? And I guess the answer is yes. I guess the answer is we're going to be doing this. And it's just nuts. But that's what they do.
Well, you know, we just passed D-Day. And the tie-in with what we're talking about is the fact that D-Day was a major reason why we won the war. We got to the Eastern European theater. We eventually defeated our enemies. Those soldiers came back, and they were a main reason why that great middle class just exploded. They came back. They went to colleges, the GI Bill, and they got trades, and they went back to industries. And we had the classic American family. The husband works for the most part. The wife stays home, raises a family. Why? Because that man was many times was working a union job. The great American middle class was developed. But what do we have now? We have a Congress that's not willing to give these brave veterans coming back their just due. They don't want to allocate enough money to take care of them. The ones that are okay and are discharged from the military, they don't have the benefits that the GIs had under the GI Bill. We are going in the wrong direction. I truly believe that is a moral dilemma. If we send people to fight and die, we have every obligation to take care of them. And in some ways, thanks to the Republicans, who are the patriotic party, we haven't done that. And that, to me, is just absolutely unacceptable.
Some interesting news coming out of California now. Blue Shield of California is going to be capping profits. They're going to be capping profits, and I guess they're going to maybe give some of that back, because again, they were set up as this, as I understand it, as a not-for-profit. Maybe what they're expending, and this is good stuff coming out of the healthcare bill when they capped that number that 80%, when they capped that number and said you've got to spend this on actual health care instead of divvying it out to your investors, this is the good thing that came out of this. And they're going to give back $180 million to their policyholders, which, again, these are excess premiums that we've been paying for years. And it's now that we got this health care bill that's paying attention to this stuff, now you're seeing them kind of take a look at it. And in Connecticut, for instance, they're talking about cutting premiums at Aetna. 10% starting in September. Straight across the board for the 15,000 customers who have policies there. They're going to see about a $259 annual cut. And again, that's money that used to go into the economy, used to be spent in local businesses that for the last numerous years has gone to Wall Street and to the investor class to line their pockets. And again, this is one of those things that you can point to Obamacare and say, this is what we got out of this. It's the start. And Bill Clinton gave a speech, and you know, I'm sure he was paid handsomely for the speech at the Jefferies Global Healthcare Conference. But he said, look, our healthcare system's way out of whack. We've got to do something to rein the costs in. We've got to do something to be like the rest of the world. You look at Germany, you look at France, you look at their systems. They spend about 10%, of their GDP on healthcare. Canada spends about 10.5%. We spend 17.2%, and we do not cover some 55 million people. And we have people uninsured in the 110 million range. In those countries, Germany, France, Canada, they got universal coverage. Everybody has health care. You get sick, you go to the doctor. You fall, break your legs, you go to the doctor. You got diabetes, you get treatment. Here in this country, that's not how it works, man. And, you know, the fact that Clinton is now coming out and saying, and again, you know, would have been nice if you'd have done some of this earlier. I'm not a huge fan of Bill Clinton, but when he's right, he's right. The reality is we've got a really patchwork system that is pitted against each other. There's no rhyme nor reason. We insure children with one program, old folks with another. Low wage workers with another. We set up a hodgepodge fund with crappy insurance for low income workers, and then we yank it away from them like we did with adult basic. There's no uniformity. And as I've been saying for the longest time, I think cradle to grave is important because there's an incentive there to keep you well. There's no incentive to push off your ailment until tomorrow. So if you're on the borderline with having diabetes, maybe we do something to kind of get that under control when you're in your 30s and 40s instead of waiting until your 50s and talking about whacking off parts of your feet and your legs. You know, just a thought. Just throwing that out there for thought. Because when we start whacking stuff off because of diabetes, do you know who pays for it? You're right, the federal government. Because the for-profit private insurers, they've basically let go of you because you don't have a job anymore. And that's what's wrong with our system. If you don't have a job, you don't have health insurance. And if you don't have health insurance, you die. It's that simple. Now, people say, well, if I was sick, I would just go to the hospital. You could do that, yes. And they would stabilize you. They would make sure at that very moment you're not going to die. They would then do as they did in California, put you in a cab and drop you off on Skid Row. Because you weren't going to die at that moment. There's nothing they could do for you because you didn't have insurance. And nobody else would take you. So they stabilize you, make you feel a little bit better, and then they ship you off. So you can die somewhere else. And that's what our hodgepodge system has created. I mean, it's really kind of goofy that we're willing to spend as much money as we spend and get worse outcomes than everybody else. I mean, I'm struggling with that, man. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Well, as you said many times, Rick, the healthcare industry has been very successful at pushing the most vulnerable onto the public dole, be it Medicaid or Medicare. And they do that on a regular basis. And even that healthcare, if you decide that, or you're in a situation where you don't have any coverage and you go an emergency, well, who pays for that? Ultimately, those of us who have healthcare pay for it. The insurance company doesn't pay for it. We do.
So when my son was born, we were in the hospital about 11 minutes before he was fully born. About 11 minutes. In fact, I went to park the car, and they called me. He said, you better run, or you're going to miss it. He was almost born in the parking lot. They charged almost $8,000. Mm. He fell out. I mean, it's kind of a nasty way of saying it, but he just fell out. I mean, there was really it was, okay, go ahead, and he was out. Almost $8,000. And I'm going, well, what did you do? Didn't have time to do all the other stuff that you did with the first one. I get the first one had to do the epidural thing where they stuck her in the back and, you know, they administered a little drug, you know, kicked things along. I get it. Okay, there was some doctoring that went on. This was just nature going, get him out. There was nothing. $8,000.
They'll tell you it cost a stabilizer. That's what they'll tell you.
They didn't stabilize her. They barely even knew her name. That's how fast it happened. She woke me up at 1 o'clock in the morning. We made it to Harrisburg in 23 minutes. When I looked down, I was doing 90 miles an hour, and my wife didn't say a word. I knew 100 was next, and she probably wasn't going to say anything to that. We made it in 23 minutes from our house to Harrisburg Hospital, and my son was born 11 minutes later.
And he hit the ground running. He's been running ever since.
Oh, jeez. That kid's nothing but energy. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Back after this.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Michigan's working families are mighty hard hit these days, but the state's new governor, Rick Snyder, has reached out with a helping hand. Not for workers, though. Instead, he handed out a 60% tax cut to corporations. To help pay for this giveaway, he snuck into law a provision that takes away 6 weeks of jobless benefits for out-of-work Michiganders. Plus, he intends to tax the pensions of working-class retirees. Where do today's far right-wing governors get such far-out, nasty, anti-middle-class ideas? Directly from an extensive network of corporate-backed wonk shops set up in every state. They grind out extremist schemes to eliminate public services for regular people and sever corporations from any responsibility for the common good of our society. In Michigan, the group is called the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Richly funded by such multi-billionaire families as the Koch brothers, the Waltons of Walmart, and the DeVosses of the Amway fortune, Mackinac vigorously pushes the billionaires' plutocratic agenda. It's a vehement opponent of unions, for example, and it pushes privatization of everything from schools to highways. In January, just as Snyder was taking office, Mackinac's dogmatists published 4 recommendations for turning Michigan into a corporate laissez-faire land. They included a tyrannical proposal to let the governor seize control of local governments and install corporate overseers to cancel union contracts, rewrite budgets, sell off public assets, and bypass or even dismiss local elected officials. This monster is now law in Michigan. Indeed, Snyder adopted all 4 of Mackinac's proposals. This is Jim Hightower saying, these secretive front groups are modern-day Trojan horses, allowing a few corporate billionaires to come into state governments and seize control of public policy, perhaps even in your state.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.com.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
How would you like to come home? How would you like to come home and see a big notice on your door that said eviction notice? How'd you like to see that? The folks in Detroit, that's what they came home to on Monday. And it turns out that this group, Americans for Prosperity, another one of these right-wing crank groups, another one of these billionaire front groups, who, again, they need to get their media out there. They need to try and, their job is to convince working people that billionaires are their friends and the benevolent corporations are good for them. Like when Americans for Prosperity brought Joe the unlicensed plumber here to Harrisburg to fight against the Employee Free Choice Act and said, we believe in the free and open ballot, the secret ballot. Everyone should have access to the free, to the secret ballot, yet they wouldn't let any of us vote. You figure that out. Because we asked, can I vote? Because they figured they were going to get all these people who were against the Employee Free Choice. Turned out a whole bunch of people showed up and said, I think I'm in favor of it. And Joe, the unlicensed plumber, give him credit. He stood there and spewed his talking points. Didn't make it to Philadelphia though, where I think they would have taken him for a walk.
I think he would have left the city Beshoveled? Beshoveled? Is that the right word?
It had to have been something, all right. But anyway, what they did is that this Americans for Prosperity group, they put these fake eviction notices on people's homes because they're trying to get people to fight against this new international trade crossing bridge that the Michigan Department of Transportation is looking at building. So they've gone to this area in the Lansing area, and they've said, this eviction notice is what could be happening if this bridge goes through. So I'm reading this story, and what caught my attention is one of the worst employers that I've ever worked for, one of the worst people that I've ever worked for in my entire life, it was a company in Cleveland owned by this guy, Matty Maroon. He owns a lot of these fly-by-night trucking outfits. In Cleveland, it was a union outfit. He eventually moved it to Bath, Pennsylvania, broke the union. $8 an hour job here in Pennsylvania was 16, 18 bucks an hour there in Cleveland, back in the early 90s. But he owns this bridge, the Ambassador Bridge, which goes from Detroit into Canada. This competing bridge that the Michigan Department of Transportation wants to build, this new international trade crossing bridge, would take away from his revenue, his toll, because he actually owns a toll road. The state of Michigan was in such bad shape that he was able to buy this, I guess, years ago. And, you know, he did some repairs and he fixed it up, and now he owns this bridge, which he makes big money on. But here, again, this is where this, you know, a very rich guy is fronting Americans for Prosperity to go out there and shill to get the people of the community to vote against something that would actually be in the benefit of the state. And by doing that, by benefiting the state, it would cost old Matty here a good chunk of change. So again, it's the rich getting richer. Influencing policy, out there making sure that half the working class will kill the other half. Just amazing. And it grabbed my attention. When I saw that guy's name, I go, it can't be good. As soon as I saw his name, I go, whatever it is, whatever side he's on, I'm against it. Because one of the worst people just horrible. One of the worst companies I ever worked for. And I've worked for some pretty bad ones over the years. Anyway, some interesting news coming out of D.C. Treasury Secretary Geithner is called out Wall Street and lawmakers Monday for trying to undermine last year's financial reform law. He's also criticized congressional Republicans for trying to starve regulatory agencies. And again, you know, that's the M.O. You go and you remember Grover, who seems to be the most popular guy in Pennsylvania.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
Yeah, and that's his whole, that's the whole anti-tax thing. And I guess Tricky Ricky took that? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes.
Old Tricky Ricky took the anti-tax pledge? Another short-sighted, visionless nitwit without any, probably couldn't get his way out of a paper bag. With a flashlight and a box cutter.
Well, I think at the end of the day, I think you're right, Rick. He just wants to supplement his place among the right-wingers, and they take care of guys like that.
Yeah.
You know, they'll help him write his book, or they'll rehire him on Fox.
Stop. Help him write his book? No, they'll write his book for him. They'll get somebody to come in, like Bush did. You don't actually think Bush sat down with Hunt and Peck to finger after finger like you do, writing a book, do you? No, they brought people in. One of the first people they bought in was that Mickey Herskowitz, who's famous for coming out and saying, look, he told me flat out, if he had the chance to invade Iraq, he was going, and he was going to get his policy pushed through, which he did. And we're too dense to, really, Mickey? We don't believe you. Jeez. Anyway, the Wall Street Journal today had an interesting story. Almost 40% of homeowners who took out second mortgages are underwater. And I'm going, you know, I would have thought it had been higher than that. Because the housing bubble, when it burst, all those people who took out second mortgages, they were already maxed to the top anyway. But they're saying now 40%. And I'm surprised that those people have stayed in their homes. I mean, if you're that far underwater, I mean, if I owned a house that I owed, you know, say $200,000 on, and it's worth $100,000, I'm leaving the keys in the door and I'm leaving. Because you're never going to get out of that. You're never going to get out from under that. Also, interesting news, Senator Dick Durbin, he's pushing to close the Amazon loophole, which I've been hearing a lot of ads about lately.
Yes.
A lot of the ads are going, you know, hey, you know, Amazon and these online companies, and understand who's pushing this. It's the big box retailers. It's the Walmarts. It's the Targets. It's all of them who are saying they're taking business from us because they don't have to pay sales tax. Let's get them. And, you know, I'm not against that. Not against it at all. But understand, if we start taxing it, it will die because you're paying shipping. And it's going to be one of those things that you pay one or the other. But, yeah, it's the big boxes who are pushing this. Also, Huffington Post had a story. The nation's largest mortgage companies are operating on the assumption that they will have to pay as much as $20 billion to settle charges stemming from the foreclosure fraud scandal. And, you know, here's the thing. At the end of the day, and you know, I have a friend who's a CEO of a credit union. And he was saying, look, you know, at the end of the day, just like a cop, the lender is held to a higher responsibility. You know, if you saw somebody rob a gas station or rob a 7-Eleven, and the cop did a shoddy job writing it up and left out a bunch of details and didn't do his job right, and, you know, any first year law student's going to take that in the court and get it thrown out as he should, because the people who had the responsibility to do the right thing didn't. The same thing should be said about the banking industry. They should have their ducks in a row. The fact that the majority of them can't find the notes, can't find the paperwork, is remarkable. Tells you how fast and loose they were playing with this whole scheme. And because they're going to lose a couple of bucks means we're going to lose it. Because we bailed them out. I mean, think about how perverse this whole thing is. And they keep telling us, well, Obama's reckless for bailing out the auto industry because it saved jobs. You know, those jobs paid taxes, and those taxes paid back those loans. At least the working class got something there. When we bailed out Wall Street, when we bailed out the mortgage industry, what'd we get? We got to bail out Wall Street and the mortgage industry. That's what we got. But, gee, Rick, you know, we need the banking industry. I know. Without it, we're kind of screwed. Also, another funny mortgage story. Bank of America threatened to foreclose on a guy unless he paid his bill in full. Do you know what his bill was? Come on. Come with me. You know what his bill was?
No, I don't. Zero?
Zero. He owed nothing. They were going to foreclose on him if he didn't pay that zero bill. How nuts are they? We're going to take a quick break. Back after this with Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
On December 28, 1970, President Richard Nixon signed the Occupational Safety and Health Act into law. Thanks to strong lobbying efforts by union leaders over many years, this Safety Bill of Rights established for the first time a comprehensive national policy to protect workers' health and safety. Effective April 28, 1971, employers were required to provide a workplace free of known hazards that caused or are likely to cause serious physical injury or death. Prior to the passage of OSHA, work-related injuries and deaths were extremely high. The 1920s saw reports of 20,000 workers killed on the job and more than 2.5 million injured per year. That number remained until the 1960s when work-related deaths dropped to 14,000 per year, but injuries increased by 20%. Today, thanks to OSHA, protections on-the-job injuries have fallen 40% and on-the-job deaths have been reduced by 60% pre-OSHA. OSHA is considered the first piece of legislation allowing the government to inspect and hold employers accountable for dangerous and physically harmful working conditions. OSHA has three branches, an enforcement branch, a research branch, and a review branch. Since its passage, OSHA has allowed for greater visibility and oversight in conditions on the job, prioritizing efforts to prevent accidents, control health hazards, and ensure workers go home as safe and as healthy as when they arrived on the job. While OSHA is a step in the right direction, there is still considerable work to be done, and only through the eyes and voices of working people with the help of their unions will tomorrow be a safer day. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therichsmithshow.com.
Most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Now to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C., Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, thanks for taking time for us.
Delighted to.
Are you fed up with the wiener jokes? His wiener's cooked? Is wiener this? Yeah. Is wiener that? Tired of that yet?
Yes, I've rarely been as uncomfortable as I was watching somebody capitulate so utterly and totally yesterday and then hearing an editorial now, House Majority Leader Eric Cantor calling for his resignation at the same time as Senator David Bitter, the Republican who habituated prostitutes, is still sitting in the Senate as a Republican.
And what bothers me about this whole thing, and look, I don't care what he does in his personal life. I think he's a good congressman. I think he's right on the policy. That's what's important to me. But this whole surrender, Ed Schultz coming out saying to resign, the Huffington Post wanting him to resign, I'm going to just shut up already. You know, it's just dumb to me.
His constituents are going to decide it, I think.
Exactly. You know, he'll stand in front of them, and if they, and I think that the people in his district, and I know a lot of New Yorkers, will go, what? Doesn't everyone do that?
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get on to something more important. The president met with the German prime minister or chancellor, Merkel.
Yes, met with Angela Merkel. They're having a state dinner tonight. Important state dinner. She's obviously a very important leader. And she's a very interesting woman coming, of course, from East Germany, and he had a joint press conference today, or press availability, I should say. They didn't take enough questions for it to be a conference, which I attended. She made some interesting points, including the fact that, really, she made the point that if it wasn't for America, she wouldn't even be standing in the East Room, because, really, many in East Germany had given up on the concept of freedom. By the time that it actually came around, she said, and it was George H.W. Bush who started to reiterate the call for it. And, it's not that she was saying that he was responsible for East Germany and West Germany reuniting, but she was very much giving a shout out to America in that way. She's receiving the Presidential Medal of Freedom tonight. Right. It was an interesting press conference. A number of things talked about, mostly the economy and Libya. On the economy, the president said that we did not believe we were facing a double-dip recession. He was obviously concerned about last month's jobs numbers, and he did say that he thinks that both the markets and Americans are concerned about what's going on, and he's not surprised because he thinks it's definitely affecting people psychologically. But, I mean, basically he's optimistic, and he thinks that things are going to improve. But I think what was interesting was on the whole Libya issue. Was a very interesting question by the Washington Post, which was that flat out question was, look, if Germany had come into the coalition actively, wouldn't this thing have moved faster? Because, of course, Germany did not participate
in
the coalition in Libya, which has now been on for 3 months. And Obama said, well, they increased their actions in Afghanistan, which has freed us up more to take more action in Libya. He said that things have progressed in Libya. He believes that Gaddafi will go, that it is untenable for him. He used the word inexorable in terms of the way things are moving, and that Gaddafi will be out. Merkel referred to "we" as she spoke about Libya, and also said that Gaddafi would be gone.
Well, you know, let somebody else take the mantle for a change, I think.
Oh, there was also another interesting piece about Libya. When the president was talking about a post-Gaddafi Libya, he referred to the possible participation by America politically and economically.
Yeah, and I'd seen something he was talking about, you know, the looking at the debt crisis in Europe, that, you know, it's going to be disastrous for the U.S. if things continue.
Yes, indeed. Indeed, no question about it.
And what are they going to do about that? I mean, I know he said that, you know, well, you've got our support, but what is that? Does that mean more borrowing? Does it mean more austerity? Or does it mean what I think we should be doing here as well, raising taxes on the people who've been doing very well the last 30 years?
Well, you don't get the impression that anybody's going to be raising taxes, certainly not by what Tim Pawlenty said. Ben Bernanke spoke today, actually, and he said some interesting things when he talked about the economy picking up in the second half of 2011. But he also said that interest rates are going to remain low for an extended period. And he did say the recovery does remain uneven. But he did also say that conditions in the labor market are remaining troubled. But he did not talk about raising taxes. He also said that long-term inflation expectations remain stable. He also said that the Fed will take, quote, whatever actions are necessary to keep inflation under control.
Well, that's what they're there to do.
Indeed.
No matter what it does. I understand Barney Frank sent a letter to the president today, I believe?
Yes. The House in late May approved the National Defense Authorization Act, 322-96. Very important act in terms of, you know, helping the military. However, it's got some language in it that would require the military to submit a written certification to Congress that repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell would, quote, not degrade the readiness, effectiveness, cohesion, and morale of U.S. armed forces. Now, critics of this language are saying it's a way of delaying the 2010 law that requires the military to abandon DADT as a policy. Then there's another section of the bill in which Congress, quote, reaffirms the Defense of Marriage Act and says that any reference to, quote, marriage within the military means only a legal union between one man and one woman. The Obama administration has said it strongly objects to the inclusion of language that seeks to delay the repeal of DADT, but it hasn't yet said it would veto the bill. And Barney Frank has asked for this, signing the letter along with Frank were Representatives Tammy Baldwin, Jared Polis, and David Cicilline.
Well, you got to give the radical right credit. They're to the end. They're committed. And, well, some of them should be committed. Speaking of committed, I understand Ed Rollins is taken on with Michelle Bachmann, my favorite right-wing loon.
Very interesting. Yeah, he has joined her as a consultant and went on a radio show today and said, quote, Sarah Palin has not been serious over the last couple of years. She got the vice presidential thing handed to her. She didn't go to work in the sense of trying to gain more substance. She gave up her governorship.
Now she quit. Let's put it the way it was. She quit because she saw the pot of gold that they were holding under her nose going, come on, sir, come on, you can do it. And then she made crummy TV shows and she's made these appearances. She's not running for president. She's just running all around the country trying to drum up more money.
That leads to one other very interesting piece, which is one that Democrat Representative Earl Blumenauer wrote to the National Park Service today, saying that in its dealings with Palin, the National Park Service resources, quote, were made available to the extent beyond that which an average American family would receive, especially considering that the stops at historical sites on the tour provided her with personal and political benefits.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I saw her here, and she's handling cannonballs and stuff. I'm going, wait a second, could I do that? And the answer is no, I couldn't do that.
And apparently she got private tours at the archives and at George Washington's Mount Vernon estate.
Well, that's what happens when you're a media darling. Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service, I appreciate your time.
You're very welcome.
I'll talk to you tomorrow. What do you got for us tonight, Jake?
Yeah, a couple important bills up on the Hill right now. The Pennsylvania State Senate is advancing a bill to ban abortion coverage from policies obtained through health insurance exchanges that are to begin in 2014 under last year's landmark federal health care law. Senators voted 37-12 on Tuesday to send a bill to the House. The federal government says the step is allowed under the law, but some abortion rights proponents say federal law already restricts taxpayer funding to abortion coverage, and that this bill goes further by restricting abortion coverage in private policies. Under the health care reform bill on abortion, it was supposed to be neutral. In other words, under the health care reform with the exchanges, unless you have a bill such as they're attempting to pass, if your policy covered abortions, you could still get it. If it didn't, you wouldn't get it. There are some states, like in Pennsylvania, where they're attempting to restrict that. However, even if this bill passes, the bill doesn't stop someone from buying supplemental abortion coverage outside the exchange. I think it's unnecessary, but given the fact that the Pennsylvania legislature is Republican, pretty much conservatively dominated, this bill does not surprise me. AARP is flexing their muscles up on the Hill. They're pushing passage of a legislation expanding caretakers' eligibility for reimbursement for expenses. The state legislature should pass a bill expanding a caretaker's eligibility to receive reimbursement for the care of elderly loved ones, AARP Pennsylvania members said during a rally at the Capitol. The proposed legislation in the House and Senate would increase the maximum monthly caretaker reimbursements from about $200 to $600. The bill would also allow non-family members and caretakers who do not reside with the recipients to receive these reimbursements. These reimbursements are paid for by the Pennsylvania Lottery Fund, which has a surplus in past years. Approximately 1,000 AARP members also lobbied against the bill that would give Pennsylvania utility companies the ability to recover infrastructure costs over a shorter period of time. They claim the bill, authored by Representative Robert Gottschall, a Republican from Montgomery, would give utility companies too much liberty to increase utility bills, and I say amen on that. A big rally held up in the Capitol Rotunda today concerning Marcellus Shale. There was an individual by the name of Jeff Fox, who is director of the Oscar-nominated film Gasland. He led a sit-in protest outside Tom Corbett's office at the Capitol this afternoon. About 75 people and more than 20 security guards packed the third-floor hallway outside the governor's reception room as Fox made repeated calls in the cell phone to Corbett staff attending to arrange an appointment. He met with no success, at least with the governor. Several Democratic lawmakers were more than happy to stand in and lead a soundbite. Representative Babette Joseph, who we've had on this show numerous times from Philadelphia, arrived outside the governor's office to stand next to Fox and declare Corbett's unwillingness to open the doors absolutely disgraceful. She said the same thing happened last week with a group of disabled people. And then Joseph asked for support for her fight against the bill that would require voter ID to vote. The highlight of the rally, Rick, was the testimony of a young woman by the name of Crystal Stroud, who is a 29-year-old hairstylist from Tijuana out in the Western Park. She quietly told the crowd she and her husband had signed a drilling lease and thought at the time it was a good thing. Then her hair started falling out. Her hands were trembling. Doctors gave her medicine for anxiety. Then she got worse, losing her sense of balance and slurring her speech. She said on April 11th she got a call that tests of her water revealed dangerous high levels of barium as well as strontium, manganese, lead, methane, and radiological materials. Subsequent blood tests confirmed high levels of barium in Stroud's body. Every neighbor I've talked to has problems with the water, she said, but there aren't anything about it. They don't do anything about it because they think if there was a problem, the Department of Environmental Protection would tell them. Every day I struggle with the fact we cannot trust our government to protect its people, she said. Her testimony really was the highlight of that rally. It was personal, it was emotional, and it was a heart-wrenching story, a real-life tragedy, and it points out that we do have some real, real serious problems with Marcellus Shale, and we need this administration to keep on top of this industry. Best story I saved for last, Rick. We talked about the Bush tax breaks. Lo and behold, some of the very people who were recipient of tax breaks have come out and said enough is enough. On the 10th anniversary of the Bush tax cuts, for a group called the Patriotic Millionaires have said, finally, enough is enough. According to them, they bought enough boats, they added enough wings to their mansions, and put enough of their extra millions in the bank. It's time to, quote, tax me, they say. New video from Patriotic Millionaires, the group of software designers, movie makers, financial gurus, and entrepreneurs, urge Republican House Speaker John Boehner and other lawmakers to end the Bush tax cuts and raise their taxes. Quote, 10 years ago, you made a mistake. You decided our country needed less money, and millionaires like me needed more. Less money for roads, to transport our products, for high-speed internet, to build our technological companies and science research, education for universities, and research to spark our innovation. Rich people are not the cause of a robust economy. They're the result of a robust economy. Fix the mistake you made. Tax me because my country, our country, needs more than my money. On a conference call with reporters yesterday, several of the millionaires featured in the video told reporters what they did with their extra millions. Dennis Matthiol, CEO of the U.S. Corrugated Incorporated, said his extras didn't create any jobs in the United States. I got a bigger boat than I used to, quote, unquote. The problem is it was built in Italy. Paul Eggerman said the Bush tax cut put more than $10 million in his piggy bank, and that he kept most of it, and it's more than likely the rest of the nation's nearly 400,000 millionaires did the same thing with their personal windfalls. The tax cuts didn't create jobs and just added to the deficit, and I say amen. Here's what they came out with, the organization themselves. Dear Mr. President, this is a letter to the president. How Harry Reid and John Boehner, and to John Boehner, we are writing to urge you to put our country ahead of politics. For the fiscal health of our nation and the well-being of our fellow citizens, we ask that you increase taxes on incomes over $1 million. We make this request as loyal citizens who now are in the past earn an income of $1 million per year or more. Our country faces a choice. We can pay our debts and build for the future, or we can shirk our financial responsibilities and cripple our nation's potential. Our country has been good to us. It provided a foundation through which we could succeed. Now we want to do our part to keep that foundation strong so that others can succeed as we have. Please do the right thing for our country. Raise our taxes, and I say amen. Who better to send a letter to Congress urging them to rescind the tax cuts and the very people who have benefited from it. And I think that's beautiful.
Thanks for the reading. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Worldwide. washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one,
call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Thillman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make it happen.
Seems like things are kind of upside down. Choke with you someone to turn around. Done it before, he can do it again. This train's coming to town like a hurricane. Herman Cain, get on board, get on board the hurricane train.
Yep, yep, yep. Get on board the hurricane train. Again, I just can't. I can't get over that people are actually taking him seriously. I don't know. Anyway, it's the end of the school year. A lot of craziness going on. This Indiana high school senior, he thought he was going to do something funny. Grabbed a hooded sweatshirt, some latex gloves, decided he was going to sneak into the school girls' bathroom at school and put a package in the girls' bathroom. Turns out the surveillance camera caught him. They called in the bomb squad. They called in the SWAT team. They called everybody in, thought it was a terrorist attack. Turns out it was a blow-up doll that the young man wanted to put in the girls' room. He now faces felony charges, could get 8 years in jail if convicted. Again, you know, in this day and era, in this day and time, the whole hooded sweatshirt thing, not working. Not working. You'd have been better just walking in with the blow-up doll on your arm and sitting her in the girls' bathroom. I got to be honest. When I was a kid, that was tame. That was really something. That was nothing compared to what we did. I mean, I wouldn't want to grow up in this day and age with this hypersensitive. 8 years in jail this kid could get for a dumb, stupid 17, 18-year-old prank.
So they're accusing him of a terrorist act?
Yeah.
How is that a terrorist act?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, they're charging him with felony criminal mischief. Which, again, you know, you called out, inciting a riot almost. They had to evacuate the school. They called in the bomb squad. They called in the SWAT team. A lot of resources going into this. And they're going to make an example out of this kid for every other kid who wants to do something stupid to keep you in place. And this is where this whole thing, really, really scary, scary stuff. So this kid could spend 8 years in jail for something dumb. Sad, sad. It is the end of the year, and I saw this story out of Salt Lake City, Utah. And again, a lot of craziness coming out of Utah, a very, very strange state. Evidently, this kid... 16-year-old Rain Price, I wonder if he's related to our friend Mark Price. We should find out about that. Evidently, this kid, this 16-year-old kid, he was kind of embarrassed at the beginning of the school year when his father kept coming out to wave goodbye. And I guess, you know, they had that moment. Dad, hey, I'm 16. Leave me alone. You're embarrassing me. So the old man decided he was going to dress up as Batgirl on one day and Elvis another or Santa Claus or a whole bunch of different costumes. And I go, really? You have nothing better to do than to really embarrass your kids? And I love his quote. He says, you know, this is a father's way of showing his love. He says, I hope this lives on for the rest of his life with him. And he can use it against his kids and tell them, if you think you're embarrassed by me, you should have seen your grandfather. Take a pill. You need help. They have hotlines for people like you. Use one. Nuts. Just nuts. I mean, are we this crazy? Are parents that crazy? Are they as crazy as this guy in Memphis, Tennessee, who decided that he was going, his kid was slighted at a birthday party, the kid didn't get cake and ice cream, so he goes back with a gun? And says, take care of my kid.
Oh, it was a kid.
The kid was like 5 or 6 years old, six.
He went back with the gun?
No, the parent, the father.
I know, the father.
The 48-year-old man went back to these people's house with a gun and says, you give my kid cake and ice cream.
I mean.
I can see you doing that.
No.
Eating the whole cake and all the
ice cream. Oh, eating the cake, yeah, not with a gun. But there's a screw loose with that guy.
Yeah, well. Evidently
over cake and ice cream?
We love our children. We love our children. We'll do what we have to do for our children.
Depending on what his kid looks like, they might have been doing the kid a favor.
Oh, right away.
Wow.
Right away you go there. Mr. Sit down, eat a whole half a gallon of ice cream.
Yeah, but I know how to handle it.
Yeah, yeah. he is now sitting in jail with charges of aggravated assault and being held in lieu of $30,000 bond.
But this,
you know, here's the thing.
This is the same guy that would shoot somebody in the road and road rage.
Yeah, if my kid
screw loose.
My kid got, you know, slighted on the ice cream and cake. Yeah, you know, I would take him. I will go over here. We'll get some ice cream or cake over here. I'll make up. I'm not going to go back to somebody's house and, you know, make that kind of a scene. I don't know.
First of all, was it just a mix-up?
Again, I wasn't there. It
could have been a mistake on his son's part.
Sure, right away blame the kid. Right away, got to go blaming the kid.
No, what I'm saying is it might have been, situation where it was just an accident.
You know what may
total
have happened?
Total accident.
You know what may have happened? The aliens may have came down and ate the kid's cake. I don't know. We weren't there. The story doesn't say. It could have been Martians. We'll say the Martians ate the cake.
Okay.
Regardless, the kid didn't get cake and ice cream. The father was ticked, went back with a gun. There you go. End of story. These are the kind of people that I fear having guns. Right there. Insanity. Last story I've got, you know, another one of these geniuses. Guys out drinking and driving, kind of like Representative Galloway here in Harrisburg last night at 2 a.m. But out drinking and driving, crashes his car. Decides he's going to beat himself up, rip his clothes up, and say that he was assaulted at the bar and he passed out behind the wheel. Turns out he lied. Another genius. Anyway, we'll see you tomorrow night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming. Beneath the lunar sway, imperial, mysterious, in amorous array. Democracy's coming to the USA.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.